It's 12 o'clock. You're in tune to KZSU Stanford. It's time once again for another edition of the Lunch Special.
The truth in your smile, I know the truth in your smile, piercing through the gloom of my ignorance. What there is in my mind, lying down, sleeping, the very ill and the heart crying. Small children have to fend for themselves. No, no, no. Is it right? Women struggling in this uncertain world. No, 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 no. Is it right? Heaping trouble on an old lady's head. So unlucky, faceless people suffering every day.
Just in case you didn't notice, got a little African theme today. Welcome to another edition of the Lunch Special. I'm Bird, your host. And from the D School here on campus, that stands for design, we have Terry Winograd and some of his students. And Terry, welcome to KZSU. Have you been on the radio here at Stanford before?
No, I haven't. It's a great new opportunity.
Great. Welcome. Welcome to your maiden voyage, and hopefully we can you can do it again real soon. Terry, you're part of a project that's going on at the D School, as they call it here, the Liberation Technologies Project. And first of all, introduce yourself a little bit. I'm sure folks here at Stanford know who you are, but there's people listening all around the world. Who's Terry Winograd?
That's a good question. I teach computer science and have been here at Stanford for 37 years.
Wow.
And his gray hair is well-earned. And over the past few years have been focusing on design of computer interactions, and then the design school, the D school, which really lets us have the opportunity to work with people from a whole variety of different departments to design projects which make a difference in the world that require those skills from all those departments. So it's, the past few years I've had great opportunities to work with people in mechanical engineering, political science, MS&E, a whole bunch of departments. It's an exciting new thing.
Yeah, and part of the project you brought on today is students who are working in Africa. Maybe not everybody's aware of this, but Stanford does a lot of work around the world in general, doesn't it?
Yes, I'm always amazed when we have students coming into these classes, and we start off by saying, well, who are you, and where have you been, and what have you done? The number of Stanford students who have world experience is really impressive. They get out there between degrees, during breaks, during summer, internships, years abroad. I think it's a shift. I've been here a long time, and I think that sort of reaching out to the world is something that's increased tremendously in the past few years.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. You've been here 37 years. It definitely wasn't like Stanford wasn't really like that when you first got here. There had to be a certain amount of that going on, but probably wasn't prevalent. How has it changed over the years, and how long has it been this radical?
I think it's interesting, and again, I see a certain segment of students because I'm primarily in computer science. Mm-hmm. So 10 years ago, what you got was students who wanted to make the next fortune in Silicon Valley. And they're smart, and they were good students, but I think that the view was a little more limited. And I've really seen a shift back towards what, you know, at least in my ideas of the golden age was true of students in the earlier eras, of taking concern for the world as a primary question, not just what can I do, what can I make money on, and stuff. And I've been very pleased to see that, and that was the fertile soil in which we've grown these courses.
Mm-hmm. And you and I are both old enough to remember the 60s, so that probably brings you a little hope, huh, for the
right,
future?
Exactly.
And I know the younger kids might not totally understand it, but it's great to see them embrace this kind of social interaction on every level. They're social networking, so they're using technologies to try to help change the world, which is really what that stuff was made for anyway, right?
Right.
Or at least we hope the makers of it did that. Terry Winograd is one of our guests today, and some of his students are here, too, and we're going to meet them in a little bit. But, Terry, talk about the Liberation Technologies Project, and the project being you have several different arms of it going on. There's even a lecture series and more projects beyond that. Talk about that.
So a few years ago, several faculty from different departments got together with the idea that Stanford should be a center for thinking about how new technologies can help in the world. Here we are in Silicon Valley. Here we have this global reach. We're a great university. So what could we do jointly to think about and help promote uses of technology? And we use the word liberation. I think that's a somewhat loaded word, especially for those of us who remember the 60s. But it was a sort of a shorthand meaning ways in which computers can improve both the political side, the economic side, and the health of their lives. We're actually affiliated with something called the Center for Development, Democracy, and the Rule of Law.
Where's that located?
It's in the Freeman Spogli Institute, which is
here on
part
campus.
It's another part of the Stanford Centers. It was initially just a few faculty who had common interest in this, trying to get together, educate each other. We started bringing in some outside lecturers, and we've now developed a lecture series that's been going on for several years with a really interesting variety of speakers, ranging from issues like how you apply economic development theory to what's going on in the Middle East and how computers have affected that, to new ways of using computers and human rights, a whole series of different issues. I'll give it a quick plug, Thursday afternoons at 4:30 in Wallenberg Hall. So it's open to anybody. Come along and you can hear about. If you look up Liberation Technology Stanford on Google, you'll find the listing.
So I was going to ask, what's the web address on that? So just Liberation Technology.
Well,
is it Liberation Technologies?
We alternate between those. I think if you search for it on Google, and it will correct whichever one you get.
Okay, so Liberation Technology, just Google that, and the whole thing should come up.
Right.
And you say the lecture series is happening Thursdays
at 4:30.
Will it go for the entire quarter?
It'll go for this quarter and next quarter.
Perfect.
Just fall and winter.
Taking a break over the holidays, of course, when everybody leaves, but it'll continue back in the next quarter.
And then we're just starting now to provide some seed funding for projects that go beyond the scope of what you can do in a student project, because they're a longer time period, larger scale. One of the projects we're starting up is to use cell phone outreach to help deal with corruption in India. One of our researchers is from India and has good connections with people in a couple of the state governments there. Mm-hmm. And the idea is there was a law that said the government had to make public what money was being given out to villages and to people in entitlements. So it's on a government website. Often that money is getting scraped off by corruption before it gets to where it's supposed to go.
Mm-hmm.
So this project is going to make it possible to send information to the people who are supposed to have gotten the money, saying, if you didn't get this, you should go see the authorities because it was supposed to be coming to you. It's part of a whole program they have called social audits. So it's adding a tech component to something that's already well underway politically. And we're very open. We have done some projects. We had what's called an Egypt hackathon, where we had teleconference with some people from Egypt, some activists there.
Were you guys part of that thing at Freedom Square, at Nasser Square? Were you guys part of
that? No, it was after that.
Oh, okay.
We hope to be, right, as things develop. But these were activists who were asking the question of how can we use some new technologies to help move that forward, and especially to move from just the resistance to actual new government.
Mm-hmm.
And we got together a bunch of people here who know how to design computer things, a bunch of people there who have the problems that we want to solve, and spent a day just trying to put that all together, and that's led to some ongoing projects there. So we're open to a wide variety of pretty much anything which is in this intersection of technology and helping people in their economic, political, and social lives.
Sounds extremely dynamic. This is amazing, taking, 'cause a lot of times college courses are, well, you know, kind of boxed in about one little certain subject, and it seems that you at the D School have taken this whole thing and blasted it out to a point where everybody in the world that needs liberation technology can get it, and it can help them. Probably need some here in the States, too, don't you think?
Yeah.
Especially with that election coming up. You know, somebody get on those voting machines, right?
Yeah, there is a project here at Stanford on that, too, but we're not part of that one.
Okay, all right. Great to hear. Well, look, let's take a musical break, and we're going to bring in some of your students who are involved in a couple of these projects, and we'll meet them and find out exactly what's going on right on the ground. This is the Lunch Special on KZSU. Stand by for more information, but here's some beautiful music.
Of my homeland, coming into Joburg, the suntan swimming pools and the Soweto shacks, airports and railway stations, stranded with a rucksack and guitar, the languages and the places change, and the sky different stars. I may be walking in the streets of a city called London, but the dust on my boots and the rhythm of my feet and my heart say Africa. I may be walking in the streets of a city called Amsterdam, but the dust on my boots and the rhythm of my feet and my heart say Africa. Say Africa. Say Africa, say Africa, say Africa, say Africa, say Africa, say Africa, say Africa. Sticks and stones and the UN loan and the passport code.
controls for countries that don't exist. It's a big world, they have their own problems everywhere, and there's gold in that clenched fist. People ask me where I'm from. I say Mandelodi Township, in a city called Tswane, meaning we are the same. I have a friend who's a great musician and is from Ebayi, near King Williamstown, you know where Steve Biko was born. You might have read or seen a film about Africa. You know it's a big continent with a great gift of Ubuntu. I may be walking in the streets of a city called London, but the dust on my boots and the rhythm of my feet and my heartbeat say Africa. I may be walking in the streets of a city called Amsterdam, but the dust on my boots and the rhythm of my feet and my heartbeat say Africa. Say Africa. Say Africa. Say Africa. Say Africa. Say Africa. Say Africa.
Welcome back to a very fresh edition of the Lunch Special. Today, concentrating on projects in Africa by Stanford students. And we're here with a professor from the D School, that's a design school here at Stanford, Terry Winograd. And Terry's brought some of his students here today to talk about the projects that they're involved in. And Terry, I'm going to let you go ahead and set this up. It is the Liberation Technologies Project. That's the overall umbrella for it. And then we're going to talk to some students that are involved in two different projects.
Why don't you the projects are part of a course we call Designing Liberation Technologies. It's taught spring quarter. Again, I'll give a plug. So any students welcome to apply. We have an application process. And in that course, student teams are made up of students from different backgrounds. Every team has to have somebody with technical background, somebody with a business background, somebody with a social science background, and they jointly then develop a project in conjunction with partners we have in Nairobi. And when the projects go well, they then, after the course is over, go back, work more with those partners, and move the project from idea to implementation. So the students we're talking to today are representatives of two of the projects that have gone forward this year. We'll talk with Claire Bennett and Nan Zhang, who've worked on a project called Makminde, and Eric Ruth, who's on a project called Nishwari. Just in terms of background, Eric is from computer science, Claire is from science, technology, and society, and Nan is from political science. So if this course interests you, and you're listening, you can be from anywhere in the university. It's great.
Or in the world. Well, no, you got to be part of the university.
No, part of the university.
That's right. You got to be enrolled here. So, Claire, why don't you take it away?
Great. So, Nan and I are on a project called Makminde, which we started in the spring, and Makminde actually stands for Make My Day, which the song that you just heard was the soundtrack to the video. That first introduced Makminde, who is a kind of Chuck Norris character, and that's the background to our name there. But what we do is we enable women to walk in Mathare, which is a community in Nairobi, a smaller slum or informal settlement in Nairobi than the larger Kaipira. And the organization that we started working with and the way we got into this kind of work was we were working with MISA, who is a sports organization that helps the community rally around soccer as a way to provide entertainment for children and enabling different learning activities and things like that. And so when I first went to Nairobi, I was responsible for establishing a connection with this organization and seeing what kinds of needs we could find in Mathare, this informal settlement. And really, the needs are vast and incredibly dire in many cases. And what's interesting about Nairobi is that there is a really high penetration of mobile phone and internet access. And so we are hoping to leverage the SMS and mobile phone capabilities of this area, or the penetration rate rather, and make it possible to organize walking groups that will help women move around the community during the dawn and dusk hours when it's most dangerous for them to be outside. And so after...
When you say dangerous, what do you mean? Are there lions and tigers getting ready to eat them up?
Right. It is Kenya, after all. The danger is primarily petty crime and assault. And what happens is when, for example, women want to go to the market in the morning, perhaps, and get either wares that they want to sell later or something for their families, they want to carry cash, and this is this can be dangerous because they risk assault. And so what happens kind of informally in the communities is that women will walk together in order to have a greater strength in numbers, but that ability to form is determined by your social network and whether other people want to go with you at that time and whether you know people, which is another problem because it's a pretty transient community. There's a lot of people who are moving in to Nairobi from other places, and there are many refugees as there are kind of economic problems in the greater East Africa region. There are more people coming from outside. So trying to establish community through a security initiative like this will hopefully help prevent or at least deter crime against this particular set of people.
So you've helped these people set up a network where they use their cell phones to create foot patrols to walk with these women when they need walking to?
Exactly. So our role is to provide patrol leaders that will update their location, and then people can send an SMS or call in and find out where the walking group is and join it if they want to walk with the group. And and so they actually can use their cell phone to enable that essence of community.
Very interesting. Just as a side note, it's been found out that women in the U.S. military for the last 10 years have been having to do that in Iraq and Afghanistan for themselves and their own safety, and not from the enemy troops. That's just a side note, though. But you've been hearing from Claire Bennett. And Claire, you have a partner in this project, right?
I do. I actually have three partners. One of them is here today. Nan, I can tell you more about the process and how it's coming along right now.
I want to underline the safety piece first, I think. So we ran a survey over the summer of about 400 households in Matare, and we actually found that, you know, over 50% of our respondents had either themselves been victims of assault or mugging or rape, or that they had, like, somebody that they personally knew were victims of these crimes. So there is an incredible need there. And as far as, like, the walking groups, you know, we at first thought about this could be a project for both women and men, because, you know, these obviously aren't problems that just afflict women in the area. Then we talked to people on the ground, and men actually said that they were fine walking by themselves. But the women came back and told us that, you know, like, if they could get a group together of, like, 5 or 10 people, they would feel much, much safer traveling around their neighborhoods. The problem is, you know, like, this is an area where there are no street signs. Like, there aren't any maps. You don't have street addresses. So, you know, how if we have a walking group, how do we tell people where the group is? And so, like, the tech piece of the project is to sort of also identify landmarks and to sort of geocode the landmarks so that when an escort group passes them, like, they'll be able to see, okay, so at, like, 12:50, you know, at this time, like, the escort group is past the church. So, like, people will sort of know where these groups are. So part of the work that we're going to be doing now, two members of our team are actually going back to Nairobi tomorrow. So part of the work that we're going to be doing now is we're going to be walking around the neighborhoods and, like, identifying these landmarks and working with community groups and sort of finding out, so what are the areas that people would really, like, meaningfully identify with? So, you know, if I said, like, Hoover Tower, everyone would know what Hoover Tower is. Something like this. And we're hoping to start a pilot of the project in a very small area of Matare, and then, you know, we'll have the pilot run for 3 months, and we'll do a survey beforehand of how people perceive crime and their experiences with crime, and then we'll do a survey afterwards. And we're hoping to sort of use this research as a way to gauge what our potential is. Like, are we actually making an impact, or are we just sort of shifting crime around? Do people use our system? Do people like our system? What improvements can we make? And if the project goes really, really well, we're hoping to be able to scale it up in conjunction with our partners in the Kenyan government, and maybe, you know, do something that can cover a larger area of Matare, or, you know, because Nairobi has all these informal settlements. There are huge swaths of the city that are covered by slums. So maybe we can scale up to those areas.
Now, when you say slums, are these refugee camps? Are these displaced people? Or these are just neighborhoods that have grown up around big cities?
Yeah, so they are definitely not refugee camps. So the area that we're working in, Matare, I think has been around since the 1960s.
Oh, really?
I mean, it's really, it's like you go there and there are like mountains. And as far as we can tell, you know, the mountains have just accumulated over time with like people just throwing trash around. You know, it's just, it's sort of like it's grown like that way.
And well, kind of like Soweto then.
Yeah.
A lot like Soweto, a neighborhood that's been there for a long time.
Yeah.
But no paved road, no paved streets?
There is one big paved road which runs through it.
And then everything else branches off of that?
Yeah, and then everything else, there's like small dirt lanes. And stuff.
When you guys go into a project like this, what is the local government's role, the national and local government? Do you have to check in with them? Do they okay this? Are they standing back watching you, or are they working with you? Are they working against you? How does that work?
I can't speak for the government as a whole. I mean, our sort of contact person there is the district officer of Matare. So, I guess, you know, in Kenya, under the colonial system, the district officers were the old chiefs.
Okay.
And so this is like somebody who is like administratively the person in charge of that area.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we told him about our project. He really likes the project. He sort of like, you know, he wants to leave this as like his legacy. And so he's been giving us a lot of cooperation.
Did he ever approach you and say, Stanford kids coming here to help us? What's the deal? Did that come up at all? Was anybody asking, like, why here, why us, why you? No?
No.
Nobody said a word. They just said, well, thanks for coming, man. Yeah, you can help us out. Just like that? Is this all good?
Yeah, I think so.
Interesting. Did you find that interesting yourself, that you were so welcome? You didn't have a problem with getting in there and doing your thing?
Well, it's been interesting, actually, because some of the partners we've worked with really like working with us, because having a Stanford affiliation helps them in their personal reputation and professional reputation.
These are local folks in Nairobi,
right,
and they
right.
know what Stanford is and what it
exactly.
Oh, okay.
So by getting credibility from them, by working with the people that they work with and getting to know the situation better through those organizations, we also give them some sort of credibility they see, or at least they perceive to gain credibility through having an association with Stanford as well.
Yeah, and that was kind of one of my other thoughts, that, you know, they got a thing in the hip-hop world, which you guys are kind of aware of, called street cred, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you go into another neighborhood that you're not from, if you don't have any street cred, you don't get taken seriously. And that's one of my thoughts. So you guys had to earn that street cred, right? How do you get that street cred with the local whoever you got to get it with? Because they have to trust you enough to know that you want to help them, and know that you're working with them, and know that you're cool.
Well, I think that's one of the benefits of doing this sort of work through the structured class that we had. Because when we first went into the class, we were partnered with a partner organization on the ground that Terry and Josh had already met with, and that, you know, had already sort of built relationships with.
They had the street cred already.
Yeah, right.
Cool.
And so, you know, when we say, oh, we're working with MISO, or we're working with so-and-so. And, you know, like, instantly we can get access to people in the area.
And the local folks appreciated what you were doing, huh?
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
We're talking to a couple of Stanford students, Nan and Claire Bennett, and they're part of the Liberation Technologies Project, the Mock Mende, and it's not Chuck Norris, it's Clint Eastwood. That's okay. But we have another student here, Eric Ruth, we're going to hear from, about another project. And why don't we go ahead and take a quick musical break, and we'll get right on to that next project. Another special edition of the Lunch Special today, concentrating on students, Stanford students, doing projects in Africa for, in conjunction with Liberation Technology, and it's all coming out of the D School, the design school here at Stanford. And we have the Terry, are you a professor?
Yes.
We have Professor Terry Winograd, because I've called some guests on the show professors, and they get kind of weird. They go, I'm a lecturer. So anyway, Terry Winograd, the professor of the Liberation Technologies Project, one of the D School's courses. Why don't you go ahead and introduce our next guest, Eric?
Okay, Eric Ruth is a student from computer science, doing a master's there. So he's one of the people that lends technical expertise to these interdisciplinary teams. And he'll be talking about a project he and three other students have been doing.
Oh, excuse me. That's on me. Sorry about that. Go ahead, Eric Ruth.
Hey there. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so the project that I've been working on with, along with three other students, is called Nishoori. That actually means please advise me in Swahili. So, and that ties into what our project is about, which is essentially a mobile-based counseling service, and more specifically, a mobile-based health counseling service. So, at a high level, what the project does is it allows people in Matare, so our project takes place in Matare as well, the same informal settlement that Makmende works in, and essentially, what it allows people to do is to text in their question over SMS and receive confidential and credible answers from health counselors. So the need we're trying to address here is essentially risky sexual behaviors. There's lots of misinformation. There's lots of rumors in these informal settlements because it's hard to find an accurate and credible source of information. So what we're trying to do is leverage these mobile technologies, which are prevalent in the area, to allow people to reach out to these sexual health counselors that that are able to answer their questions in both a private way and also a credible way.
That's Eric Ruth, part of this project. And say the name again, Eric, because I'm going to mispronounce it if I try.
Yeah, it's Nishaudi.
Nishaudi.
Mm-hmm.
And what part did you play in coming up with formulating this project? Was this something you thought up or something somebody else thought up that you took on, or how did that work?
Yeah, it was very much a group effort, I'd say. Our team was composed of four people. There's myself, who's a computer science student, obviously. We also had a political science student and a couple business students. So we had people from all different backgrounds. And I wouldn't say any one of us came up with the idea. Part of the whole process of the D School is, you know, ideating and iterating on ideas together and just kind of having these jam sessions of creating ideas. So it very much came up organically out of that process. Once we came up with the idea, I think, you know, different people brought different strengths to the project, right? So myself being a computer science student, I was the one who was focused more on, you know, the technical implementation and how we'd actually make this happen, right?
You're the tech guy.
Yeah, I'm the tech guy. but, you know, it was a very, you know, it's an interdisciplinary project, so we need both a tech perspective along with, you know, social science. We need, you know, how the viability questions, how is this actually going to happen and how are we going to make it work, which is where the business people come in. So
that's called where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah. So... yeah, we all played a large part in the development of the idea, but in terms of the actual implementation, we've all kind of stuck to our strengths, if that makes sense.
It does, it does. Now, you mentioned that these people are texting each other, they're instant messaging.
Yeah, yeah. So let me explain how it works in a little bit more detail.
Sure.
Being the tech guy and all. So I think one of the best things about this solution is its simplicity. Like, it's simple, but it's scalable is the really powerful thing about it. The reason it's simple is because to the people using the service, it literally just looks like you're having an SMS conversation. And, you know, phone use and SMS use in these informal settlements is a really common thing, you know. All the young people in these communities are really used to texting each other and used to using this technology. So it's not it's not a new technology that they have to learn. But on the other side, it's a scalable service. So what we do behind the scenes is when they send in an SMS, that doesn't actually go to that won't actually go directly to a phone. That the plan is to send that to a server. And then that server can take that message and forward it to any number of counselors that can answer it. So what this allows us to do is take a large volume of questions coming in over SMS and then kind of forward them on to a group of counselors that can manage responding to these. So when a counselor responds to one, it goes back to the server, and then that sends it back to the person who asked the question in the first place.
And I'm getting the real feeling that these projects you folks are setting up are totally sustainable, meaning that once you step away from them, because at some point you'll graduate in the future,
mm-hmm.
these projects will sustain themselves, and these folks will be able to use the benefits from what you've come up with, right?
Yeah, I think that's been one of the big focuses for all the projects in this course is... focusing on sustainability and also building off of local capacities. So the idea is not to jump into this other country, other city that, you know, we don't really have a grounding in and, like, you know, parachute in experts and magically solve the problem, right?
Why change something? The United States has been doing that for years.
Yeah, right.
And then they leave and everything's...
and everything's hunky-dory afterwards, right? Yeah, not
yeah,
really.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so... So it's really been important for us to focus on the local capacities, building off of those and making sure these are sustainable going forward. I think a big part of that is working with these organizations. So with Nishaudi, we're also working with MISA, like Makmende did.
Uh-huh.
And these organizations have both credibility on the ground, like we were talking about, but they also have just the infrastructure on the ground to continue making this happen. So the idea is, you know, we'd like to step in and like to help set this thing up. But, you know, going forward, we really plan on this being a MISA-owned project that they can sustain and continue running.
Very cool. That's Eric Ruth you're hearing from. He's part of the D School's Liberation Technologies Project. And you've actually gone to Africa.
Yeah. So along with Nan and Claire, we were... myself and another teammate, Risa Kitagawa, were in Africa this past summer doing essentially a field test of this project. So we haven't built out the full scalable service yet. Uh-huh. Before we did that, we wanted to test out the idea and see if people felt comfortable asking these questions over SMS and everything. So we kind of tested it out, got a positive response, and now we're on to the next phase of trying to build out a more sustainable system.
Now let me go down the line here. Eric, where are you from? Where were you born?
I'm from the Bay Area, actually. I'm a local, so I was born in Menlo Park.
Really?
Yep.
Well, that's unheard of to have somebody that close. Is your dad a professor?
Maybe.
Can't say, huh? Okay. Did you have any idea that when you got into college, you'd be going to Africa to try to help those people solve their problems?
You know, I can't say that I would have predicted that, but, you know, I think that's one of the great things about some of these projects they're offering at the D School is it really allows people to apply the things they're learning in school in a real-world context.
Sure.
In a way that's, you know, isn't possible in a lot of these other classes.
Which can help you further on down the road when we're going to need guys like you to solve much bigger problems like how to save the planets.
Yeah.
Claire, what about you? Claire Bennett, where are you from?
I'm from rural Alaska.
And when you were getting out of high school and you found out you were coming to Stanford, did you have any idea you'd end up helping people in Africa?
I thought it was a pipe dream.
And as it came on, I mean, of course, you've embraced it because you're talking about it here today. How does it compute in your mind? Is it like, I mean, you see yourself every day doing this. Is it pretty interesting to go from rural Alaska to all of a sudden you're somebody helping on-the-ground folks in Africa with security problems? That's pretty heady stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it's heavy and it's a learning experience every day. But I have to tell you, there are so many parallels in other parts of the states, including places in Alaska that I've been to where the poverty and the level of need is also very high. So it's interesting to see those parallels and also feel that in the future I'll be able to take anything I learned from this and also maybe expand that to other places in the world. So that's
sure.
Good to know.
Or take it back home.
Exactly.
Nan, what about you? Where are you from?
So I was born in Beijing, but I grew up all over the U.S. So I don't really have like a hometown or anything.
Mm-hmm. And when you were getting out of high school, wherever that might have been, where'd you go to high school?
Exeter in New Hampshire.
So when you were getting out of high school and you knew you were coming to Stanford, did you have any inkling in your mind that you would end up in Africa helping Africans work on security problems?
Nope. I mean, like, as you know, I was 18. I had no idea what I was going to do. So
exactly. And are you sophomore, freshman, senior?
So I'm actually a grad student now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Are all three of you guys grad students?
I am.
We got two grad students and a...
Nope. I graduated.
Oh, you're already out, Claire.
Yep.
Wow. So this isn't just...
If we want to get technical, I'm out as well, but a recent grad.
Okay.
Yeah.
So these kind of projects, are they more grad student projects?
I'd say they tend to be, but they're not exclusively grad student projects. But,
okay.
I don't know. I mean, maybe to Terry, you can talk about like the mix.
Yeah. If students want to sign up for the course, it's primarily graduate students, any professional school, any level, PhD or master's. We do have a few undergraduates who get in. Of course, we have co-terms who are sort of both, but primarily graduate.
And Terry Winograd, let's wind up with you. You did talk about that a little bit. I wanted to delve in a little more with this whole the D School. How long has it been around?
D School's been, there were inklings of it for a while before, but it's been pretty much official for, I think, 4 years now.
Have you been there the whole time?
Yes. Yeah, I was in some of those early inklings.
And speak about, it's the design school here at Stanford. They call it the D School. And besides Liberation Technologies, what else is going on at the D School that folks should know about?
So it's not a separate school in the sense of getting admitted to it. It works with students from different departments. It doesn't have its own admissions process or its own degree. And it's a way for students to get an experience working on real projects with interdisciplinary teams. We have about, I think, 25 courses each year, and they range in topic. There's a couple like this one. There's another one called Extreme Affordability that works in the developing world, a number of countries. They're all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
But there are others that are much more commercial. There's one called Launchpad, where one of the student projects turned into one of the best-selling iPad apps.
Really?
News reader. There's really a variety of topics. What holds them together is this approach that Eric was talking about earlier, about how do you do design with an interdisciplinary group, and what's the process of coming up with new ideas.
So I guess the D School's real magic is putting these kids together, putting these minds together in a group, and then giving them something to work on.
Exactly.
Or having them come up with something to work on.
Yeah.
And your role in all this as a professor, Terry, what did you come up with the idea for Liberation Technology?
It was a group, as the students. We work in teams. It's a rule that if you're going to teach a course at the D School, you have to have faculty from at least two different departments.
Interesting.
It has to be something which is team-based. It has to be something which crosses over between the different ways of looking at things.
So, and who could be credited with the D School? Who put it all together? And again, it must have been a team, right?
It was a team, but the real spark plug was David Kelly, who is in the mechanical engineering department, head of the design program there, and also was one of the founders of the company called IDEO, which does design. It's one of the largest design firms, and developed a lot of this method. They now have just created there this year something called IDEO.org, which is taking the same ideas but applying them outside the university context but in a nonprofit. So I think you can think of that as a grown-up D school.
Very cool. Terry Winograd and his students been the guest for the hour, the D School. And what's the website to the D School, Terry?
So the D School, two things I want to say. D School is just D School, DSCHOOL, .stanford.edu.
Okay.
I also wanted to mention there's this 4:30 seminar series, but this week in particular, two points. One is it's the student projects. So the projects you've been hearing about and others will be giving a more extended talk on what they're doing.
Oh.
The other is it's not in the usual place. So if you look it up on the web, it's this week only it's in CEPR, which is the building over across from the Ford Burnham Pavilion. It's an economic research, whatever, a new building. So come 4:30 on Thursday and you'll hear more about the projects.
Very cool. Terry Winograd, Eric Ruth, Claire Bennett, and Nan, I want to thank you all for your work. Thanks for coming down. Please stay in touch, and let's do this again real soon, okay? This has been another edition of the Lunch Special. Stand by for Holt and the Electronic Groove. And in the meantime, do remember, you can always hear this show on the internet at radioforall.org. It'll be put up there at least by tomorrow. You can hear all the Lunch Specials at radioforall.org. Thank you very much, and have a pleasant day.
Oh, yeah.